when you want to be stopped in your tracks.
I'm running to shoot it. It's 50-50. You can catch his gun or he shoot you.
When you want to know the truth.
She was brainwashing her from the start.
We're here to investigate.
Something's gone wrong, big time.
Search Background Briefing Podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just before we start, this episode contains some strong language.
Ever since I heard the story of Jack McLennan disappearing into the night from Fix Crossing, I've kind of become obsessed with the weird mystery at the centre of it all. How could Jack be there talking to his workmate Chris Duke 1 minute and then just gone forever the next? I've spoken in detail to Chris now and I've heard his version of events. While he did tell me lots about what he and Jack got up to that day, his story about what happened at the crucial moment of Jack's disappearance stayed pretty much the same as I've always understood it. They were there together until suddenly Jack just vanished. But in my interview with Chris, he did share some new details, including a story I'd only really heard about in rumours and brief text exchanges. And when Chris started telling me this story, it felt like a huge breakthrough. It felt like something that might help make more sense this whole thing. It's sometime around 9 p.m. and Chris and Jack are likely both high on meth. Jack a bit and Chris a lot. Chris is stuck in this weird drug-fueled loop, cleaning and pulling his car apart.
Once you focus on something, you focus, you know, and my job was cleaning my car up and all that. So that's what I was doing. Jack was over at the shed.
Chris then says he notices two sets of car lights entering the picnic area. And this is the part of our interview I just keep thinking about.
The cars come in, so the two cars come in, they come in together. So two sets of headlights.
It's virtually pitch black at Fix. There's no moon that night or any street lights. It's just Chris, Jack, and the distant glow of house lights poking through the bush. So when the two cars drive in, Chris is almost blinded by their headlights.
Because the lights are bright. Like, you come into there, it's dark, like, the high beams on or whatever.
Chris struggles to make out specific details about the cars, like who's driving, what types of car, or even what colour they are. At the time, he doesn't really think much of them at all.
I was zoned in trying to clean my car up, all this sort of thing. I didn't really care. Like, just a couple of people turned up. They're probably doing the same thing I'm doing.
At some point, Chris calls out to Jack, making that kind of juvenile prank just to make him jump.
And I started laughing. And I turned around and went back to my car.
Then, not long after that, something distracts him from his cleaning project. He looks up and notices one of the two cars that drove into Fix earlier is leaving.
One car left not long after. Jack come over, I made that joke. Hey, look behind you, laugh.
Then around 10 p.m, he pulls his head out of the car again. And that's when he realises Jack's disappeared.
And then it all started getting weird. You know, very weird, like, where the fuck is he going?
Chris says he then starts looking for Jack and can't find him. He waits for around 3 hours for him to turn up. And when he doesn't, he decides to leave. But as he starts his car and starts driving out of Fix Crossing, he says he notices something he'll never forget. The other car, it's still there. And this time, he takes a closer look.
It was a dark coloured ute with a rooftop camper and it was like black plastic hanging down like a shade sail or something like that.
Chris can't make out if there's anyone inside, so he keeps driving and he leaves Fix Crossing. But ever since that night, he keeps thinking, whoever was inside that car would likely know whoever was in the other car. And between them, one of them might just know what happened to Jack.
How many times has that replayed over in your mind?
Every day. Every day I think about this stuff. Because I can't explain it. It's so off, it's not funny.
In the days that follow, Queensland Police make a public statement calling on the owners of the dark car to come forward. But for more than a year, it seems like no one said a word. Until, out of nowhere, someone does come forward, with their own story about a car going to Fix Crossing that night. And eventually, that story makes its way to me. I'm Rob Bergen, and for now, this is the last full episode of What Became of Jack, the latest season of Unravel. A bit over a year after Jack went missing, I'm sitting at my desk working through the holiday period when I get an intriguing message from Jack's mum, Kelly.
Some big revelations rolling in this afternoon. Kelly says she has received word from somebody who says that their brother has told them that they picked up Jack from Fix Crossing on the night he's gone missing and that they need no further information.
This news comes as a big surprise to me. On one hand, it sounds close to hearsay the way that Kelly describes it in the text, but on the other, the fact it's so similar to the story Chris Jute told me, it makes me pause to think about it.
And suddenly Kelly's favouring this theory as well, and it hasn't come directly from Chris. So it's like organically their two stories are lining up at pretty much the same time and being told to me in different ways.
I realise I need to go back to Jack's parents, Kelly and Ross, to find out more about this new lead.
If you can avoid like banging on the desk or anything that kind of ruffles, you know, like if you're playing with jewellery, that sort of stuff, it comes across.
Yeah.
I've organised for the three of us to chat in a studio at the ABC on the Sunshine Coast. After all the time I've spent with them each individually and on the phone, this is the first time the three of us have all been in the same room at the same time. I can see that after everything they've been through, Ross and Kelly are tired. They're just about spent.
I do feel terrible to think that the last month, or actually 2 months, I just could not relive this trauma. You know, talking about the past, and I'm actually doing a lot of work taking calls from the community, so I just couldn't do it.
But as we start talking about this latest lead, I sense a glimmer of hope coming from both of them.
Can you just explain to people what those latest leads have been?
A lady rang me very recently with important information, and she's not a young woman, you know, she's a middle-aged woman, had a great job in the community, so we had a couple of chats.
Kelly's connection to this person, it takes a little bit of explaining. Basically, the woman used to live in the area, and because the region's towns are pretty small, Jack knew her daughter.
So Jack had been to her house a couple of times, and she just said, look, your boy's beautiful, he's just a great guy.
So she knew Jack already, and when he went missing, she began following Jack's story closely. She and Kelly had spoken on the phone once before, chatting about different rumours and theories that they'd heard of. But this time, Kelly notices something's different.
I think that call lasted 3.5 hours. I knew she had something to tell me.
The woman tells Kelly about something she'd heard from a brother. He'd been drinking. And suddenly, out of nowhere, he brought up Jack's disappearance. And he said that on the night that Jack went missing, he actually drove into Fix and picked Jack up himself. At first, the woman tells Kelly she didn't pay too much attention to what her brother said.
Because the first time, you know, he'd had a few drinks and I didn't know if it was just silly talk.
But then, on a separate occasion, her brother repeated the exact same story. This time, the woman took it seriously.
She said, you've got to go to the police. And he said, no. He said, I don't want to know about it because I'll be the next one.
When Kelly and Ross heard all about this, they realised they'd heard of this guy before. A few years back, Jack had told them about an incident at a local pub in Kingaroy where a guy went off at him and it nearly got physical.
I just knew it had upset Jack. He'd come home after being out one night and he just said, oh, he was a bit of an idiot, Mum, you know. He was just trying to be tough, and he said it could have gone to a fight, but of course it didn't. And, Jack just thought he was being a real jerk.
They realised this guy at the pub, he's the same guy who might have picked Jack up from Fix. Ross thought this guy's bad news, so he called him up to confront him.
I rang and asked him if he'd ever met Jack before. And he said to me, oh, look, I had met him, but only briefly. And I said, oh, okay, well, there's more information. And then he just went into a different level of, I'm not a drug dealer. Don't assault my reputation. Don't try and rage bait me. You're trying to rage bait me. I don't do drugs. I said, I never said you did do drugs. I'm just asking you if you'd attended Fixed Crossing and seen Jack there. And he just still denied it.
Word of this phone call must have made its way back to his sister, the woman who'd originally confided in Kelly. And she stopped talking to Kelly at all.
And so now she's cut off from me. I wanted more. You know, where did you pick him up from? What happened? And she never got back to me. I mean, it's really hard. I think they're really brave to actually talk about their own family member. So I called her brave, but I was very upset that it didn't go any further.
So I decide that I need to get in touch with the brother to try and get to the bottom of it. Did he really pick up Jack from Fixed Crossing? And if so, why? Where did he take him? I get the brother's number and I give him a call.
Hey mate, I've been following the Jack McLennan story for the last year or so, and I've seen the last couple of weeks your name pop up as someone who may have been around Fixed Crossing that night.
The brother says he wants nothing to do with the podcast. He says the whole story's bullshit and the only statements he's making are to the police. We chat for a while, but he doesn't agree to be quoted. Then he pushes to end the phone call.
Yeah, okay, no worries, mate.
I try calling the sister, the one who brought the story to Kelly's attention in the first place. I call multiple times and leave voicemails, but she never gets back in touch. This has become all too common in my investigation. I uncover what feels like explosive information that could finally help answer what became of Jack, but then I struggle to find any substantial evidence to support it. And then, like clockwork, information makes its way onto Facebook where speculation runs rampant. And people at the centre of this information, they receive all sorts of hate, even death threats. So they get scared off, they don't want to talk, and some of them, they even leave town. I honestly feel like I'm at the end of my tether. I'm starting to resign myself to the fact I may never find answers for Jack's family. I can't help but think, if all this online speculation about Jack's story continues to go unchecked, maybe there won't ever be an end to this story. Chris Duke, the last known person to see Jack alive, has never met Jack's parents face to face, and he hasn't spoken to them on the phone in quite a long time, not since those tense calls with Jack's dad, Ross. But he tells me he has a message for them, if they're okay to hear it.
From my heart, I hope that he's found. I am so sorry that you even have to go for the ship, because I could not imagine it. And I've already told him this. For Ross, I understand why you threatened me, but please don't ever do it again. And I feel for you. I hope that Jack comes back all right. I hope that he, like I said, I pray and hope that he just needed alone time. Next minute he's going to come back on the radio and everything's just going to go back to normal. That's what I hope. I pray for. And I'm not a religious person, but I've actually prayed for that. Because I couldn't imagine what it's like.
Do you reckon there's any chance that you could collaborate or cooperate more now? Like, what's sort of happened that...
No, not after someone threatens your life, mate. You're not going to go talk to them. No, that's a recipe for disaster, isn't it? I'm not going to go talk to them, no. I've talked to them on the phone. I've given them... I'm trying to do this now to help, you know, as much as I can. I want to get the right things out there as well, instead of the lies and the bullshit.
I put the same question to Kelly and Ross.
Do you see a situation down the track where you could sit in a room with Chris and have an amicable conversation?
No.
Yes, I could.
No.
I can.
I will grab him by the throat upon sight.
I want to do this because I want to see also perhaps the last person that was with my boy. I need that chance. You know, I want to sit with him. I want him to look me in the eye. I'll be able to tell by his body language and by looking at him.
Jack's ex-girlfriend Carly is doing her best to move on. but all the online speculation about her connection to Jack and the baseless rumours that she was somehow involved in Jack's disappearance, it just keeps threatening to drag her back into the thick of it all. And she hates it.
Yeah, I just find it bizarre that people don't tend to realise what I've been through and what I'm still going through and just want to be like, oh, well, she did it because, you know, they were arguing. Okay, well, every couple argues. Like, you can't tell me that no couples argue and fight and think about breaking up and haven't thought about, you know, oh, my God, like, what am I doing? So, yeah. Yeah, it's just crazy to me, the whole thing.
When Jack disappeared, Carly was deeply involved in the initial searches. But after a while, it just got too much. She was the one that police went to over and over again to identify items of Jack's that were found or that could be missing.
They showed me socks and underwear and jumpers and, you know, and I knew what was missing from Jack's stuff. Like, there was things missing and it made no sense. Like, why are those particular things missing? Where are they? And, like, no one else could do that.
What things were missing?
So Jack's headset is missing and his...
Like a headset to play video games or what?
Yeah. Yeah, video games, Bluetooth headphones. But it was a headset. So that was missing, and his flannel. Yeah, basically just a normal flanny with a hoodie missing.
Even now, nearly 2 years after his disappearance, she's still mulling things over in her head.
And it's like, well, that's weird. Bloody, you know, 30 degree day. Why would he be wearing a hoodie? And where is his headphones?
And there are things I'm still mulling over in my head too. Carly was texting with Jack on the night he disappeared, at the same time he was out at Fix Crossing with Chris Duke. It was mostly about ending the relationship on a decent note and trying to organise for him to move his stuff out of the house they shared together. But he also could have been texting with pretty much anyone. Because it's 6 p.m. on the day Jack disappeared, just a few hours before he went missing, he put up a post on one of the local town's Facebook community groups. The post reads, 27-year-old male in need of accommodation. If anybody's renting a room or knows someone who is, please reach out. And below that, he added his mobile phone number. There are more than 20,000 people in that group. That's over 20,000 people who could have seen Jack's mobile number just hours before he disappeared. Any one of them could have got chatting to him and then offered to come and pick him up from Fix Crossing. It could have been a stranger or someone Jack thought was a friend. For me and the people closest to Jack, these questions just go on and on.
I will still always question what happened, and I will still always love Jack no matter what, and he will forever be in my heart. Like, you know, every day, like, I wish that he would walk through that door and it would just end and that would be it. But, like, you know, that's not happening. And I know that's not happening. And I've learned to accept that. And I just wish people would realise that I'm not talking because I'm hiding something. I'm not talking because I don't see how it's going to help in finding him, because I don't know what happened. And, you know, no matter what I say, no matter how much evidence I have, no, everyone's going to make up their own story. I will forever have the title as the ex of, you know, the guy who went missing.
I've chased down nearly all the rumours of foul play that circle around this story. And as compelling as some of those rumours sound, there's still no real proof that foul play definitely was involved. It makes me return to the other possibility in this story, and that's that on the Friday night, maybe Jack's just taken more drugs than he's used to, wandered off into the bush, and got lost. Here's my theory for how that could have happened. It's 10 p.m.-ish, and Jack's annoyed or bored with Chris, so he decides to make his way back to Mergen, where his car's parked, even though he's left his keys behind. He walks north, takes off his shoes and crosses the creek. But it's dark, the creek's bendy, and once he gets across, landmarks are kind of hard to make out and he gets disorientated. Instead of heading back to town, he then heads south, and after almost 2 km, he's way off course and down by the olive grove. It's only a few hundred metres from here to where his wallet and credit card are found. He's been turned around and is now near a spot where an unfamiliar fence line meets a new bend in the creek. It's pitch black. He's barefoot, high, possibly confused and frustrated. His phone's running out of battery. And after that, who knows what he decides to do.
My gut feel sort of says misadventure, and it may be misadventure, tiredness, swimming related. Given proximity to water is pretty much always that there's a possibility of drowning.
Daniel Wood is a drone operator whose company, Working Drones Australia, helped look for traces of Jack. He says he joined the search about 4 months after Jack disappeared and has done the same thing on other missing persons cases too.
Normally, once the police stop looking, and I think that there's something that we could bring, maybe there's some areas that were difficult to search.
In Jack's case, Daniel says it's possible that Jack ended up in the creek, or maybe one of the other water bodies around Fix.
If he's interacting with water, there's always a possibility of something unusual happening. You know, you dive in, you get stuck, various currents, etc.
In the weeks after Jack's disappearance, Queensland Police did conduct extensive dives of the area, and they found nothing. But we also know it rained heavily in the days after he went missing. So there is a possibility that this rain could have washed away any trace of Jack, things like his footprints, the clothes he was wearing, or belongings like his phone. It could also mean that if Jack did fall into the water and drown, as gruesome as this sounds, his body may have broken up and washed away pretty quickly.
It doesn't take a great deal of time for a person and their remains to be quite scattered. Pieces of bone that are often scattered quite considerable distances.
While I was looking into Jack's story, the remains of a girl who drowned in floodwaters nearby were discovered about 4 km downstream from where she vanished. Her family had spent almost 3 years searching for her. So I feel like after everything I've uncovered, I can't fully discount the possibility that this could be tragic misadventure. But that doesn't mean I'm convinced by it. It just means it's possible. The thing is, I still believe it's possible Jack was murdered or killed accidentally, and there are a number of theories around how that could have happened. But at this stage, there's just not enough hard evidence to support any of them. Even Queensland Police seem undecided. To begin with, police treated the case as a missing persons, then a possible homicide. Then the last I heard was that Jack was being treated as missing, but that it could change again in an instant if they found the right kind of evidence. The lack of concrete answers is doing nothing to quell the speculation, the rumours, and the vicious accusations flying around town. When someone goes missing suddenly like Jack did, it's kind of like there's this rupture in time. Their life, the sum of their achievements, every interaction they've had, whether meaningful or otherwise, it gets frozen and becomes open to interpretation. And as I've been looking into the story of Jack's disappearance, I've had a chance to hear about the kind of person he was when he disappeared and how he'll be remembered. I feel like I've been lucky to get to know him through the eyes of so many different people and through some very different stages of his life. And I feel that maybe, like me at the same age, he didn't really know himself. It's something Jack's ex-girlfriend Carly wrote about once in an email to me.
You wrote probably one of the most profound things I think I've seen about Jack, and you said Jack had all these big dreams for the future and was always thinking about the future, but he didn't always know what he wanted to do in the present.
Mm.
Can you just expand on that a bit more?
Well, I guess, like, because he went from, you know, personal training, wanting to build that, and then, like, he said, oh, maybe I want to do construction, but then also he wanted to do electrical and thought, oh, you know, I want to be an electrician. So it was kind of like, yeah, it was always swapping and changing, and it's just like he didn't really know what he wanted to do. He just wanted something that he could build from.
when you're forced to think about every possibility of what could have happened to someone who's vanished over and over again for years, you have to confront all their different sides, their complexity. But Jack's sister Sydney says she doesn't want all the theories, all the rumours, to take away from the Jack that she knew.
I just don't want people to think that everything they hear is true, and the things that happened that night do not show Jack as a character overall. I've heard some things that probably did go on that night, but I had never seen Jack in that way. I know he might have experimented with little things through his age, because he was 27. That's a decent age to start experimenting with things. But I don't think he did anything serious or that he knew that would lead to damage or harm.
Have there been some things that you've done that you've felt in the back of your mind that Jack would be really proud of this?
Oh, I think of Jack every day, and when I'm doing things, I'll think, oh, Jack would definitely be proud of this. Graduating high school, he wasn't around then, so that felt like something he should have been a part of. And going to the gym, I've been pretty consistent with that recently, so he would take me all the time every week and do PT sessions, and I'd carry on everything that he's taught me through them.
Sydney has just started a uni degree and is stepping into the next phase of her life, but a missing older brother is never far from her mind.
I think especially being at my age, everything's starting to speed up and lots going on, so sometimes I do put it to the side, but when I sit with my thoughts and think about everything, it's overwhelming at times.
Lately, I've been thinking back to something that happened when I was on a trip out to Fix Crossing. It was right towards the end of 2025, about a year after Jack went missing. I'd spent the day talking for hours and hours with Kelly. And while I was with her, she got called out to yet another obscure location for yet another failed search mission. I joined her on that search, and it was demoralising for both of us. So at the end of the day, I went to the Gomeri Hotel for a pub meal and a schooner. At one point, I lifted my beer up for a drink, and the thing it was sitting on caught my eye. It was a custom-printed Jack McLennan beer coaster with a call out for information, and it had Kelly's personal phone number for anyone to call at any time. It just struck me then, and it still does, that Kelly has given herself over and over to this search entirely. She sacrificed so much, including her privacy. I'm gutted my investigation hasn't been able to give Kelly the answers that she's so desperate for. But then again, to Kelly and for me too, it's clear that this story isn't over. Our investigation has now built the clearest picture yet for the public of Jack's last known day and the weeks leading up to it. We've also built the clearest timeline through access to text messages and the last people to see Jack alive. For the first time, those people have spoken publicly and in detail about the last hours they spent with Jack, what he means to them, and what they think happened to him. Since the episodes were first released, the rumour mill certainly hasn't come to a complete halt, but it has slowed a bit. More people know about Jack's story now than ever before, and that means more eyes, more ears, and more scrutiny on the case. Hopefully, that also means someone might come forward to talk about something they saw that night, rather than just something they heard online. And maybe authorities will continue investing enough resources for further searches or until the community's concerns are finally put to rest. Above all else, I hope that Jack's family can find some answers and find some peace. No family deserves to lose their child in this way. For Kelly and Ross, the injustice of this situation, it can feel inescapable.
It's nearly impossible, you know. Once before you could laugh a bit easily, or you could look forward to things, you know, like my daughter's got this basketball thing and normally I'd be excited for her. I don't have any excitement anymore. And I know it's affecting my children. You know, last night I'm talking about Jack again on the phone. They're upstairs. I walk up and their faces are dropped. This has affected my kids more than anything. What about you?
Well, I've completely disconnected with all my friends. I just don't ring anybody anymore. I feel like I'm shutting down and I've got nothing left in me. I sit at home like this most of the time with my head in my hands, going through thing after thing. I cry. I've got my son's photos up there with candles burning on the mantelpiece every day. And just feel like you're falling through the sky. You're shrinking from everything.
You're never the same. Never.
Despite losing that zest for life, Kelly says she'll never stop searching for answers. She will scour every corner of the towns around Fix Crossing. She'll keep knocking on doors, posting videos to Facebook. She'll continue to comb through potential leads and rumours. Because for Kelly, finding out what happened to Jack isn't a choice. It's an absolute must.
I'm really working for Jack all the time, and the girls are missing out a lot. So this has more been about boots on the ground, going and visiting people. I'm getting their names, going and seeing them, their friends. It's all that. And we're still in that stage of we want to know what's happened. I deserve to know what happened. I don't want unanswered questions. I just want to find Jack. That's it.
For now, this is the last full episode of What Became of Jack. We'll be back with a bonus episode soon that digs into more of the behind-the-scenes information about this case. If you saw something that night that Jack went missing, or you've heard something firsthand that could help, get in touch. unraveltruecrime@abc.net.au. Or you can always give Crime Stoppers a call on 1800 333 000. If you're looking for your next true crime podcast, there are 6 other seasons of Unravel ready for you to binge right now. Make sure you follow Unravel to be the first to hear about our next season. Also, you can dip into the incredibly popular podcast made by our colleagues at the ABC called The Case Of. It takes you step by step through some of the biggest trials in Australia as they happen. What Became of Jack is hosted and reported by me, Rob Bergen. Our producer and fact checker is Jake Morecambe. Supervising producers are Yasmin Parry and Alex Mann. Theme composition and additional music by Martin Peralta, Ashley Cadell and Emrys Cronin. Sound design and additional music by Emrys Cronin. Our executive producers are Tim Roxburgh and Eric George, and the head of audio on demand is Jessica Radburn. Thanks for listening, and let's continue to spread Jack's story.